It's time for Motherlode Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherlode. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.
Well, we welcome you to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. Pleased to be joined by Congressman Tom McClintock, a Republican who represents District 4, which covers the Motherlode region. Congressman McClintock, great to have you back in studio with us today.
It is great to be back in person, BJ. Good to see you again.
So you were just the keynote speaker at the TuCare Natural Resources Summit over at the Motherlode Fairgrounds. Your topic was entitled Regulatory Reform Now with an exclamation mark. So can you kind of summarize some of the key points that you made?
Well, it's what we've talked about on this show many, many times, and that is that we used to have a system that worked and worked very well to protect the resiliency of our forests and promote the local economy. All of that excess timber in our forest is going to come out one way or another. Either we carry it out or nature will burn it out, but it will come out. When we carried it out, we had healthy, vibrant forests. We had a booming economy. Every year, we'd send U.S. Forest Service foresters out to mark off excess timber. We'd then auction that timber out to logging companies. It would pay us to remove that excess timber. 25% of those revenues went right into local communities like Sonora. The other 75% went to the Forest Service to take care of our forests. That system worked, and it worked extremely well. And then we scrapped it all in the 1970s with these environmental laws that have made active forest management all but impossible. An untended forest is no different than an untended garden. Just leave yours alone for a few months and see what nature does to it. Nature is a lousy gardener. Then that's why we formed the Forest Service, to do a little gardening, to take care of our forests. And they did an exemplary job until we passed laws that have basically made it impossible for them to do that job. We're now dealing with morbidly overgrown forests that are susceptible to disease, pestilence, drought, and ultimately are consumed by catastrophic wildfire. We need to return. This is not a theoretical discussion. We know how to manage the forest. It's just that we stopped doing that about 40 years ago.
Are there some main regulatory hurdles that stand out in your eyes should be removed?
National Environmental Policy Act and the Endangered Species Act are the two principal ones. In order to do a forest thinning project under NEPA, it now takes about 4 years to do the environmental impact statement. It costs millions and millions of dollars. So when you try to do a forest thinning project, instead of making money for the government, it actually consumes our forest management dollars. So not a lot gets done. We were able to get a categorical exclusion for the Tahoe Basin 5 years ago. I got that into the WIND Act of 2016. It's taken the review process from 4 years down to 4 months. It's taken the environmental reports from more than 800 pages down to a dozen or so pages. It's been used extensively now in the Tahoe Basin. In fact, the forest thinning projects that were made possible by that are what saved South Lake Tahoe when the Caldor fire came through there a few weeks ago. When it hit the treated area, it flattened out, it slowed, and they were able to put it out. But unfortunately, to overcome environmental opposition in the Senate, we had to limit it only to the Tahoe Basin. And the irony is, the forest supervisor in the Tahoe Basin that implemented the law that we got passed, Jeff Marsolet, is now the forest supervisor in the El Dorado National Forest, which is where the Caldor fire started. He had been begging to get that authority extended to his forest as well. We tried to do that, but we can't even get a hearing in the Natural Resources Committee right now, even though 5 years ago, that law passed on bipartisan majorities and was actually signed by Barack Obama in 2016.
So how optimistic are you at this point that some legislation could get passed?
I'm very optimistic that 452 days from now, we'll be able to get that legislation through the House of Representatives. I am sadly very pessimistic that we can do that we'll have a chance of doing so before then, and that's just because of the political makeup of the House and the ideological bent of the Democratic Party.
I also want to ask you about the Washington fire. I understood that you just had a tour of that area while you're here in Sonora. What was your observations?
Well, first of all, a lot of luck. We had a tour by Undersheriff Neil Evans, and he told me that it was first reported when they had their deputies together, not far from it. They were able to fan out immediately, evacuate the area because there was nearby fire. There were already assets in the area that they were immediately able to dispatch to the Washington fire, and that held it to 150 acres, where it otherwise could have taken out the entire town of Sonora. That's critically important, that initial attack. And we've seen a change in the Forest Service since the Tamarack Fire. You remember earlier this year on July 4th, a lightning strike caused a fire in the Humboldt-Toyobe National Forest. The Forest Service sat on that from July the 4th, I believe, until July the 12th. It was smoldering on a quarter acre. They sent a helicopter over every day to take pictures of it for their Facebook page, but never bothered to use that same helicopter to drop water on it. July 12th, it exploded out of control. It ultimately consumed 70,000 acres and destroyed, I think it was 23 homes. This let-burn policy is idiotic, and ironically, on the same fire footprint, you had the town of Woodford's, which had the same problem in 1987. Small fire, Woodford's fire department dispatched some folks out to put it out because it was on Forest Service land. They were told to stand down. In fact, they were threatened with arrest. And that fire then exploded out of control, took out, I believe it was about 6,500 acres and 25 homes. So the only good news I can offer you on this is that the new chief of the U.S. Forest Service has at least rescinded that policy at least for this fire season, is now ordering initial attacks. Frankly, I think the smaller the fire, the higher the priority it should be, because it is easier to put out a small fire than a mega fire. You let a small fire become a mega fire, you've got a big problem. And that's what the Forest Service has been doing on several of our fires over recent years. And ultimately, Tamarack, I think, has convinced them that that's an idiotic policy. By the way, we had the same policy cause the Yellowstone fires in 1987. And Ronald Reagan reversed that policy. Unfortunately, Reagan left office, the policy returned, and we're back to square one. But for the good news is that for this forest season, the let-burn policy of the Forest Service is being held in abeyance, and they're doing initial attacks on all fires. And again, in the Washington fire, you can see how critically important that was. Saved the town of Sonora.
And it's still stay tuned for next year to see what's going to happen?
Yeah.
We're talking with Congressman Tom McClintock on this weekend's Motherlode Views. Staying on the topic of natural resources, water, we're right now in the midst of another drought year. Is there much happening right now when it comes to looking at water supply?
No, not where it's going to count, which is surface water storage. It's not all that complicated. We have not built a major reservoir, more than a million acre feet, since the 1970s, while the population has doubled. We are not going to droughts are nature's fault. Water shortages are our fault. That's a choice we made when we stopped building new dams and reservoirs, and we're not going to solve our water shortage until we rescind exactly the same laws, by the way, that are preventing us from actively managing our forests are the laws that are preventing us from building more dams and reservoirs. The approach of the left is desalination. Well, desalination makes a lot of sense if you're on a desert island and there's no other source of water. It is extremely expensive. The state-of-the-art desalination plant is the Carlsbad facility in San Diego. To give you some idea of how inefficient desalination is, the Carlsbad plant consumes enough electricity for 250 homes in order to produce enough water for one home. Wow. Let me repeat that so it sinks in. It consumes enough electricity for 250 homes for a year to produce enough water for one home for a year. It makes no sense in a region like ours, which is one of the most water-rich regions of the country. I mean, nature's been trying to teach us this lesson. We went through a period of 5 years of extreme drought. Our reservoirs were drained to the dead pool level. of another year of that drought, people would be turning on spigots and nothing would be coming out. And immediately following that, we had one of the wettest periods on record. And the same reservoirs that had been drained almost dry had to open up the floodgates on their dams to release billions of gallons into the Pacific Ocean because we had no place to store that excess water. Listen, there is, and again, we're now back to a drought, and all of that water that we let go into the Pacific Ocean, which we could have stored behind dams, we now desperately need again. It frustrates me when we can't learn some very simple lessons. There is no water shortage in California. Mother Nature produces 4,500 gallons of fresh water every single day for every man, woman, and child in this state. 4,500 gallons of fresh water every day per person. The problem is it's unevenly distributed over time and distance. We build dams to move water from wet times to dry times. We build aqueducts to move water from wet regions to dry regions. We don't build all these facilities so that we can more efficiently dump that water into the Pacific Ocean. And one of the great ironies of the desalination movement is this. They are perfectly willing to dump that water into the Pacific Ocean and then to spend many, many times what it would take to store that water in order to reclaim it from the ocean once we've dumped it there. It makes no sense at all, but this is the state of public policy today. At some point, there's going to be a return of common sense. I mean, they don't call it common for a reason, but it's most uncommon in Washington right now.
Need to take a break. We're talking with Congressman Tom McClintock on this weekend's Motherlode Views. He represents District 5, which covers the greater Motherlode region. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. Our second segment is coming up in just a minute.